Today is going to be a great day. Oh, yeah. It's so stupid to call it hump day. We're not in the middle of anything. We're beginning to dominate. That's what an unplugged army does. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Whenever it is that you've decided to make Doug Franz Unplugged a part of your day, my family greatly appreciates it. You have found the only podcast in the world that is totally devoted to the coverage of four professional franchises, two college basketball teams, and one college football team that's all devoted to one specific major market, Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh! I think I said devoted twice. I'd have to go back and listen. But that was that. There you go. There you go. Dominate your day like I just dominated the intro. How are you? Hopefully your Tuesday went great. I'm calling my shot. My Wednesday is going to be the most forceful day in my life. Here we go. I have an enormous meeting today. It's a Zoom, so I'll be at home, but I'm extremely nervous because it's at 8 in the morning. And I don't know how, you know, focused I can be because I'll probably be going to bed today. I think I'm going to get to bed a little early. I think I'll be in bed by maybe even 5 o'clock. I think by 5 o'clock. And that'll be early for me to get to bed by 5, maybe 5:30. So I'm going to sleep for about 2 hours and then I'll get up and shave. And here's the broad spectrum of this meeting. It could be, thanks for your time, but your ideas really don't mesh with our company at all. It could be, yeah, we could probably make something like that work. Here's a couple bucks a month. All right. Or it could be the most life-changing day I've ever had. Minus, you know, marriage and childbirth. That's how wide-ranging this meeting is. And I won't know an answer afterwards. Like, I have no idea. Speaking of marriage, I don't know why I just thought of this story. Do you remember the first time someone said your wife? I mean, it is so unbelievably common to me now to say, this is my wife, Jennifer. Or, hey, Doug, I met your wife. Or, oh, Doug, your wife has a lovely singing. Oh, my gosh. When they talk about Jennifer singing. So I've heard the phrase my wife, you know, well, for 26 and a half years now, but not quite a half, but close. Yet I will never forget my reception and the photographer kind of asked me to take my ring off. And he went, I don't know why I just took my ring off. I just felt like I had to do that to show you. I did. So let me put it back on before I lose it. But he took my ring, took Jennifer's ring, took the bouquet of flowers and the marriage license and did one of those, you know, cheesy artistic pictures with everything laying on each other. And so then, I don't know when it was, about 10 minutes later, he comes out onto the dance floor and he hands me my ring back. And he says, I did this to take some pictures. But I gave your marriage license back to your wife. And I literally looked at him and had no idea who he was talking about. You know, the priest said, I now present to you, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Douglas. I forget what he said, but you know, people had said, I present to you, or they called Jennifer the bride. No one had said your wife. And when he said, I gave your marriage license back to your wife, I remember looking at him like he was an alien and I had no idea whether he was friend or foe. That was the most confusing phrase I think I had ever heard. I don't know if you have a story like that of the first time you heard the phrase your wife and how it creeped you out. I was creeped out about 3 weeks ahead of that though. I never lived within 3 hours of Jennifer before we got married. Isn't that weird? That's right. I never lived within 3 hours of her before we got married. But about 3 weeks or 2 weeks or so before the wedding, She came down to my apartment and she didn't move in personally, but she moved a bunch of stuff in. And I'll never forget, I don't have a sister. I'll never forget opening the medicine cabinet for the first time and seeing all of that stuff it takes to be a woman. I was, whoa. I mean, it was, and it was one of those things where she put it in there like on a Sunday and left to go back to her hometown. And I get up Monday morning for work and I've got like four things in there. You know, I got fingernail clippers, I got deodorant, and I got shaving cream, and I got a razor. I think that's all I got in there. And all of a sudden the thing is packed with with all of that. It was a shock to the system. All right. Enough story time. Oh, no, one more story. Thank you. Thank you is the story. I was flooded with positive comments in email, on Twitter, and Instagram about how much you enjoyed Mr. Orange. I cannot tell you how much that meant to me that you enjoyed that, because I knew it's something I could never have done in my previous life on the radio. I would have been ripped if I would have asked to have Mr. Orange on the show and on the old show. And to just be able to do it conscience-free, because I know it's a good idea and I know good people help good people, it just meant the world to me that you appreciated it the way that you did. So thank you. I only had a chance to send out one tweet, however, that had the GoFundMe information. And if you could, please find that tweet that I sent out yesterday and follow that link. That would be great. I will make sure at some point today I retweet it again, but try to do what you can to help out Mr. Orange's family. And like I said, do what you can. You got an extra mil lying around, drop it on them. You got a buck, hey, drop it on them. That's the Unplugged Army finds a way to do it together. No matter how much, maybe this time you're the engine. Maybe this time, maybe the next time you're only the caboose. Maybe you're just the middle car hauling nothing, but you're on the train. All right. Herm Edwards forever ruined that phrase. I'm on the train. I used to love that. And now I don't want to have anything to do with it. All right. I did something cool today. I did breakdown. I have the whole NBA draft. I read this amazing article on Paul Goldschmidt. I have all of these sports stories I didn't know what to do with. So I did a massive breakdown. So please send me a tweet today or post on Instagram and tell me what you thought of breakdown. That's coming up at about the halfway point of the show. Your 4-minute offense is up next on Doug Franz Unplugged. For the first time in what feels like years, housing prices are starting to stabilize just a little. This is Doug Franz for Ideal Home Loans. Call 602-899-7000. If you are in the market for a new home, if you're finally deciding I don't want to rent anymore, call Ideal Home Loans. 602-899-7000. This might be the perfect time to strike. If you're already a homeowner, it still might be the perfect time to strike because you still have a ton of equity in your home, but prices are starting to stabilize, meaning that equity is going to go down. Another example is if you have bad credit card debt, you're starting to miss the window. Your house may slowly drop in value. Use that equity right now. Don't be intimidated by interest rates, because the interest rates on your credit cards are 4 to 5 times worse than they are on your house. Call Ideal Home Loans today. It's no obligation, and you owe it to your family to at least investigate. 602-899-7000 or go to idealhomeloans.com.
Four minute offense.
Everything you need to know in sports that affects Maricopa County, the state of Arizona, and the world, you get in 4 minutes. We start things off in the Gaslamp District of San Diego. Diamondbacks a loser 3-2 in 11 innings. The lone highlight for the Diamondbacks offense came in the third inning. After a one-out walk to Perdomo, Jordan Luplow stepped to the plate.
And Luplow sends one out to center. Oh, and it gets behind Grisham, and here goes Perdomo as it rolls all the way to the wall. Tony Parascheeki going to send him home. The relay is offline, and he comes all the way around.
The
that inside the park home run was all the offense they would give Zach Gallen. Gallen went 6 innings, 2 earned runs, 6 hits, 3 walks, but he struck out a career high 11. The problem? The offense. Christian Walker went 2 for 5. The other 10 batters combined to go 2 for 31. That's an .065 batting average. Manager Torey Lovello.
Well, things just unraveled a little bit on us from probably the 5th or 6th inning on. I don't think we did a lot of damage offensively.
He's right. Only 2 runs scored despite earning 6 walks from Padre pitching. Ian Kennedy gave up an RBI single in the 11th. He's the losing pitcher. Diamondbacks take on San Diego today 1-10. Madison Bumgarner against Mike Clevenger. Last night, Mercury lose 84-71. Coming into the game, Minnesota only had 3 wins on the season. And despite the Mercury having a 22-11 first quarter, they lose for the 11th time this year. The assist-to-turnover ratio, atrocious. Minnesota fantastic at 24-11, while the Mercury had 15 assists and 16 turnovers. Interesting commentary afterwards. Skylar Diggins-Smith had 25 points on 50% shooting. Tina Charles only 7 points. Head coach Vanessa Nygaard.
And when one of our main scorers isn't doing it, that does put a lot of strain on us.
So she says that about her main scorer, Tina Charles. What does Tina Charles think?
How did I feel inside? I didn't really feel I got it inside. So I just do the positions that they put me in and try to, you know, be as best as I can. We have a lot of weapons on this team. Everything was going for Sky. So we just play accordingly.
So the coach says our number one scorer didn't score much, and the number one scorer said you were calling plays for somebody else. Sounds like a 6-11 team. Mercury has a rematch against Minnesota up next Thursday night in Minnesota. NHL award night last night. Congratulations to Scottsdale's own Austin Matthews, who won the league MVP.
I want to thank the Toronto Maple Leafs from top to bottom. Management, ownership, coaches, all the staff, every single one of my teammates. This doesn't happen without you guys, so thank you.
Moritz Seider of Detroit won Rookie of the Year. He didn't give a shout-out to his parents. He called them out.
Well, obviously, a big shout-out to everyone who was sitting here. My parents couldn't make it. They just got back from Croatia, and they thought it was more important to go on vacation.
NFL news. 20 of the 24 women accusing Deshaun Watson of inappropriate sexual conduct have agreed to a settlement. As of now, the other 4 cases will still proceed to trial. U of A's Rob Gronkowski has announced his retirement, although some believe it just takes one call from Tom Brady to bring him back. One of those people is his agent. The latest on PGA Tour versus LIV Golf. Sources to ESPN have confirmed Brooks Koepka is leaving the PGA Tour for LIV Golf. There was also a golfers-only meeting with the commissioner at the Travelers Championship yesterday, showing the players dramatic changes that could be upcoming to the PGA Tour in response to the threat from LIV Golf. And finally, a great story about karma. Angels, Kansas City. Royals outfielder throws the ball into left field to a fan, caught by a guy about 25 years old who runs around celebrating until he sees a small boy about 8 years old and throws him the ball. Then later in the game,
when Walsh hits the home run, the kid's dad's gonna come up with the baseball. He's like, here you go.
Now that the young man has 2 baseballs.
You got 2. He's like, you know what? No. Gives it back.
That is so amazing.
Sound credits. I got everything baseball-wise today from MLB.com, even though they obviously took it from the Padres and Bally Sports Arizona. But I got it from MLB.com. I got the Vanessa Nygaard and Tina Charles sound from the Mercury, well, just from their PR department, because they're nice enough to email it to me. And I got that piece there at the end from the MLB Twitter handle, and the hockey I got from ESPN.com. Congratulations to Austin Matthews. That's cool. That ending story there, oh my gosh. That was so cool. I mean, the guy's about, like I said, I ballparked it at about 25 years old. Young-looking dude. And he doesn't rip it out of anybody's hands or something. It's basically thrown a little bit in front of him, and he leans over a little bit and catches it and has a celebration. I mean, he doesn't act like a little kid, but there's a kid in him so happy to get a baseball. And then he notices the 8-year-old that's about 5 rows in front of him. Kid's got his glove and everything. And he points at the kid and flips him the ball. All right? Now, it's a couple innings later, the Angels hit a home run, and the dad gets the ball. The dad gives the ball to his son. So now the boy has 2 baseballs, and he immediately gets the first one, and points at the 25-year-old guy and says, "Hey, I got this," and flips him the ball. And the guy's like, no, it's okay, it's yours. And the kid says, listen, I got a ball, go ahead. What is so hilarious and beautiful, if you get a chance to see this video, I don't know if it's the guy's girlfriend, his wife, his sister, who it is, but there is a young, beautiful woman sitting next to him who I guarantee you is going to be a great mother and a great wife, if she already isn't. And the reason why I can guarantee you that, the look on her face when the boy flips the ball to her brother, boyfriend, husband, whoever it is one of pure joy and love and compassion and kindness. It's amazing. You can read in her face that she loves the adult next to her that now has a dream come true of getting a ball, and she's thrilled to see kindness and action from this boy. The whole thing is summarized by the look on her face. It's an awesome video. I really, really challenge you to make sure you see it today, because I think it'll grab you. I think it'll really grab you. All right, let's get to Diamondbacks before breakdown when I go heavy into the NBA draft. Diamondbacks, a loser 3-2, really stinks to lose this game. Really stinks. In which Zach Gallen was amazing. Now, maybe amazing is a little too high a praise when you only go six innings. But in my opinion, he only allowed one earned run, an Eric Hosmer home run. The reason why I say my opinion is Jordan Luplow's in left center field and the ball bounces right out of his glove into center field. I think that's an error. And in the modern wussification of America, you have official scores that rule those base hits. So that made the run that was knocked in an earned run. It was originally ruled an error. That makes it an unearned run. It was C.J. Abrams who scored, and it was Kim who knocked him in. So now Kim gets an RBI, and it's an earned run. That's the first of the two earned runs that are charged to Zach Gallen. I disagree with that. But having said that, he pitched way too well, hitting a new strikeout total of 11 for his career in a game. Six stud innings. You got to do more than the Arizona Diamondbacks did in this game. Here's Torey Lovello.
I felt like we did a lot in this game, especially early. I thought Zach was doing a great job. Things just unraveled a little bit on us from probably the fifth or sixth inning on. I don't think we did a lot of damage offensively. We had some situations where we could have executed and got runners to third base in extra innings, and little things that we do very well here, we weren't able to. So we got to tighten that up. We got to figure out how to do the little things that are going to help us win the game.
I don't quite know what Torrey's talking about. They went out 1-2-3 in the first. Christian Walker led off the second with a base hit, and they went 1-2-3. Then you have an awesome Jordan Luplow inside the park home run with that followed a Perdomo walk. If you didn't see the inside the park homer, it's crazy. It is so unfair to judge Trent Grisham in center field on it, because the ball is seriously going to Grisham's right. And as he's moving to his right, the second he starts to dive, the ball slices way to his left. I've never seen a ball slice like that that's hit down the middle. With a right-handed bat, it always slices if you hit it to right field. If you've never played in the outfield, I only did it in batting practice. It is the creepiest thing if somebody hits a line drive the other way. As you're approaching the ball, thinking you've got it tracked, and as a right-handed player with a glove on my left hand, it is so weird. As you're running at the ball, and all of a sudden it's whoa, and it goes way over to your left. Really hard to judge until you get used to it. I've never seen it do it at center field like that. So it was a ball that was sliced up the middle, rolls all the way to the wall inside the park homer. So Diamondbacks have a 2-0 lead. And then they go two outs to start the fourth, get a double and a walk, but then a strikeout. So when Torrey says that, you know, we got off to a good start, I don't know how he thinks one hit in the first eight batters of the game constitutes a fast start. I said one person on base. Like, you didn't even get a walk, you didn't get an error, anything. So out of the first eight batters, seven of them are out, and yet Torrey says we got off to a good start. You did get a 2-0 lead on the inside the park homer, but that's a little bit of a fluke. And then you get two runners on the next inning, don't score. And when you got the two runners on, you already had two outs, so it's not like you had a dominant chance of scoring. And then after that, you did nothing. Torrey, no, you didn't. You didn't get off to a fast start. You didn't have a good begin, middle, and you had a terrible end. Not good. Zach Gallen, real good.
Yeah, I thought he was pitching. He was aggressive with his fastball, and I think he was getting their respect. You know, they had to pay attention to it because of the velocity, and the pitches weren't too bad. I think they were just barely missing. But he went into a little bit of a pitch mode and started to make some pitches, and he hadn't given up an earned run really until the home run. So I felt like he had a really good day.
What he's talking about is the fastball command wasn't perfect for Zach Gallen, and he still found a way to get guys out. Was really good. There was one decision that some people would say Torrey Lovello cost him the game. And I'm going to say, no, he didn't. Here's your situation. He anticipated an issue coming up in the sixth inning and had the lefty up and ready to go. Okay. The lefty being Mantiply. And admittedly, Mantiply is lights out. He's lights out. So it's easy to argue you should have put in Mantiply, especially when he's ready and you're facing a lefty. But here's what happens in the sixth inning. You get a ground out. You get two back-to-back ground outs. Now Hosmer's at the plate with a one-run lead. And they pitch to Hosmer. Hosmer goes yard. Then, since the next batter up is a righty, he pitches to Alfaro. And Alfaro laces a double that he ignorantly tries to get to third on, and he's thrown out on a really nice throw from Luplo, but still, you do not make the third out at third base. So it would have been home run double with intelligent base running by the Padres. And that really would have been a problem for Torrey Lovello. And then with the next batter being a lefty in Abrams, you definitely would have brought in Mantiply then. So the mistake, looking at it in hindsight, is not taking out Zach Gallen before the Hosmer at bat.
Yeah, I mean, I've had probably five or six different scenarios that I've been working through, and obviously it wasn't the right one. I should have probably had the lefty queued up and ready to go, and I just felt like Zach deserved an opportunity to get in the dugout and get that batter, and a home run was going to be the absolute worst case scenario, and I didn't think he was going to hit a home run. I felt like between the two hitters, between Hosmer and Alfaro, he was going to get either one of those guys, and unfortunately it didn't happen.
Sometimes you make a mistake. Sometimes the decisions you make don't work out. I disagree with a lot of the moves that Torrey Lovello makes. I shouldn't say that. That's too harsh. I disagree often, not a lot. There's a difference with some of the strategical moves that Torrey Lovello makes. But you do have to understand that as bad as Madison Bumgarner has been pitching, you have to anticipate going to the bullpen today. So we're talking about yesterday's game. So in Torrey's mind, he's thinking, Mad Bum's going tomorrow. I need to protect the pen because Mad Bum's only giving you five. That's all he ever does. And if you stretch him to six, he really gets shelled. So you got to plan ahead. And Zach Gallen is pitching very, very well. And I love what Torrey said there. The only way I can get beat is with a home run. And I didn't think either one of those guys were going to hit a home run. So he's going to get one of them out, even if one of them gets a hit. Now, Abrams would lead off more than likely the seventh inning, and you lead off with a clean inning with Mantiply. You're not chasing. You bring in Mantiply in the sixth. Now you got to move him in the sixth. It really messes things up. And Zach Gallen's one of your best pitchers. So why not in that situation trust Zach Gallen to attack, get one of the next two guys out, and then you have the small option of even deciding maybe I'll bring him back. If he gets Hosmer there, it goes right, left, right at 7, 8, 9. He might decide, you know what, go ahead and pitch the seventh. You just got him out 1, 2, 3 in the sixth, and you were able to get out of a jam in the fifth. I'll give you a shot at least at one batter, but if anybody gets on in the seventh, you're out. I think that's the way to go. I wouldn't have done that with a weak pitcher. I wouldn't do that today. If Madison Bumgarner is on the mound against a right-handed hitter and it's a one-run game, I'm yanking him. Now, I don't mean if it's 1-0 in the second, but you know what I mean. If there's any question from the fifth inning on, I'm yanking Mad Bum because I want to win the game and I don't have confidence Mad Bum is going to pitch well enough to get me through that inning. I have that confidence in Zach Gallen, so I'm making that move. Postseason, maybe not. When every game is so vitally critical that it's just survive in advance, maybe I take out Zach Gallen. But regular season, when I know I'm going to go through my pen the next day, oh yeah. Torrey, I'm with you. So both of us are wrong. You know, it didn't work for either of us. And I hope you respect me when I tell you. So if you disagree with me, go ahead. But I hope you respect me that I'm telling you I agreed with a move that didn't work because the next time something doesn't work, if I rip him, I can't stand it when people go, oh, hindsight's always 20/20. Of course you knew what you'd do that. You know, no, I'm telling you right now. I would have been wrong too. And I defend Torrey Lovello's move. I want to answer a question that I got on Twitter. Bobby asked me this question at AZBobbyL. So, Doug, when do the D-backs become sellers? Peralta, Kennedy, Mad Bum, and last night's guy, Davis. Well, on the last one, I'm not mocking you. I don't know if you just missed the E or didn't know his name. I'm assuming you mean Zach Davies. So the heart of your question is when do they become sellers? I think they're already there. I mean, we're talking about a trade deadline that's 5 weeks away, and if somebody suddenly made an offer to the Diamondbacks that's a really good offer, then just about everybody's gone in a heartbeat. There's no reason to keep anybody. But let's be clear, it's not like you're going to get much. There's one player on the roster who would bring back a great haul, and it would be tough to trade him, and that would be Merrill Kelly. You got Merrill Kelly signed for the rest of this year and all of next year. That makes him incredibly attractive. And if you make a move like that, you better get a lot back. Mad Bum would easily be available. But the question there is you're basically buying a prospect. And here's what I mean. I don't have the contract in front of me, but I know his contract averages $17 million a year. But it's set up at the time kind of intelligently. It's not intelligent now, but he's paid around $23, $24 million a year now, and then it drops to around $14 million a year, I believe in 2024 and 2025. If I have that right, what the process was supposed to be is, hey, you're still an ace in this time frame, so we'll pay you a ton of money, and we hope, you're going to laugh at this, we hope playoff revenues, and remember 2020 was never supposed to happen, but we hope playoff revenues will then pay us for the expensive contract. And then when you're on the tail end of your career, we're not paying you nearly as much. And we have more income or more revenue to then spread around to other players and try to keep the train going. Well, unfortunately, the train never left the station and Mad Bum was never worth the money that he's been making. But if you trade him, another team might look at this and say, you know what? This is one of the single greatest postseason performers in the history of the game. And to give us 5 or 6 innings or be a workhorse out of the pen in different situations, that's going to be worth it to us to try to win a World Series. Now, they would not take that whole contract under any means. So the Diamondbacks will have to pay just like they did with Zach Greinke. But how much would the Diamondbacks be willing to pay? If they're willing to pay a significant chunk, you can now ask for a lot back in a trade. So it's not a case where somebody's wrong if they say nobody wants Mad Bum. It's nobody wants Mad Bum at that price. But if the Diamondbacks chip in, and they barely chip in, it's like, fine, we'll take Mad Bum, but we're giving you nothing else. I mean, you're getting our worst prospect or some injured guy, whatever. But if the Diamondbacks are going up above half of the remainder of the money, oh yeah, they'll get somebody good. Ian Kennedy, that's a weird trade. And the reason why it's weird trading Ian Kennedy is this year he gets guys out, but he gets them out on line drives. I mean, I don't know if this stat is official, but I guarantee you he leads the league in exit velo outs. There's loud contact that's usually an out. Now, it's kind of an irony because last night he's the losing pitcher on a ground ball that wasn't hit all that sharply. And if it was hit sharply, I think Luplo would have been able to throw him out at the plate. It was Alcantara, the former Diamondback, that was a pinch runner. And I think Luplo would have thrown him out if it was actually hit hard. So here I am telling you, Ian Kennedy gets everybody out on hard hit balls, which means Lucca is eventually going to run out, and these hard hit balls are going to be extra base hits. And instead, it's the ground ball that had to roll all the way out to the left fielder that he actually loses the game on. But yeah, Kennedy would be there. Melanson is definitely trade material, but nobody's really going to give you much because Melanson's not had a good season. Peralta, you know, left-handed stick off the bench. See what I mean? So when you say, when are they going to be sellers? They're sellers now, and they'll sell anybody that they can, but they're not very good. Nobody wants the Diamondbacks players that the Diamondbacks would be willing to trade other than Merrill Kelly. And I don't really want them to trade Merrill Kelly. I think he's too good. But it's not like the Diamondbacks are going anywhere, so get what you can get. All right, coming up next is breakdown. The NBA draft is tomorrow. There's new rumors about the Suns that you need to know about. But I also drift into the entire NBA draft. There's NFL news. There's PGA Tour news. There's just so much stuff that I don't want to sit here and take up a whole segment and go, now to this. And the only way to really do everything justice but move fast is to break it all down. That's next on Doug Franz Unplugged. Breakdown.
Break it all down. Breakdown. Breakdown.
Whenever we have one major topic with a ton of little facets or a thousand different stories all at once that I feel like you're deprived of knowing, if you get to work without this knowledge, we go breakdown. Let's start with the NBA draft. It gets underway tomorrow night. Originally, the Suns have absolutely no picks, but rumors are heating up that the Suns love some players that could be had in the top 12 in the draft, and they're looking to jump in. The problem? It will cost you more than likely Cam Johnson and a future pick. Here's one strong rumor. Trade Cam Johnson to New Orleans, take their number 8 pick in the draft. Now you don't have to give him money, and that frees you up to re-sign DeAndre Ayton. If the Suns do it, let me give you some names that could possibly be there. On the probably not list, but I love him, Keegan Murray. He's a power forward out of Iowa. Why do I love him? Because the Suns don't have a true number 4 horse that'll attack the offensive glass and dunk on somebody's head. Murray is tough, he's not afraid, and he'll go get his own points. He can't really guard a point guard, but he can mostly switch all screens. Most importantly, he plays angry, so he can be the yin to the DeAndre Ayton yang. Dyson Daniels from G League Ignite. He's basically Cam Johnson that doesn't shoot as well. I've only read about this player. I've never seen him play, but I have seen highlights, and I like his defensive intensity. A lot of people love this player. I'm in the like category. Jalen Duren, center out of Memphis. Some people would say there's no reason to have him and DeAndre Ayton together. I disagree because I think he gives you great flexibility off the bench. And if the max contract doesn't work out for DeAndre Ayton, then trade DA and you'll be happy with what you have in Duren. He's great at setting screens. He's great at rolling to the basket and he'll actually dunk the basketball. Johnny Davis, guard out of Wisconsin. He's almost a replica of the Cam Johnson you would be trading away to New Orleans. Johnny Davis is a good athlete, but he doesn't have that sneaky special athlete quality that you see from time to time from Cam Johnson. But he's almost as good of a shooter, and he's a much better defender. AJ Griffin, wing out of Duke.
I really like this opportunity because you already have Chris Paul. Griffin doesn't turn 19 years old until the end of August. He's shot over 45% from three in his time at Duke. Plus, he's smart and got a 7-foot wingspan. Although not a great defensive player now, learning under Chris Paul could give him exponential potential. He's another pick that would slide right into the position of Cam Johnson, who you traded to get the number 8 pick anyway. Ochai Agbaji, guard from Kansas. Most outstanding player of the NCAA Final Four. Not a great NBA player, but good at everything. He also totally fits the mold of the type of player James Jones has normally drafted in the past. Strong, accomplished, and a winner. Ozamain Dang. I can't tell you much about him because I never saw him play. But what I've read about him, a little slower than Cam Johnson, a little stronger than Cam Johnson. Plays in the Australian Basketball League. Tari Eason, LSU. A player everyone else will say he's a stretch, but I love him. Every single person in the NBA would rip this pick if the Suns trade to number 8 and take him, except me. He plays defense with the intensity of Patrick Beverley without being a jerk. The young man just bleeds intensity. My thoughts on the NBA draft as a whole. I believe Jabari Smith should be the number 1 pick overall out of Auburn. He's a work ethic machine. I believe Chet Holmgren will be the number 2 pick for Oklahoma City. I think that's a mistake. I like Paolo Banchero and Jaden Ivey, both better than Chet Holmgren. Holmgren gets a lot of comparisons to Kevin Durant. I understand why. I see him more as a Porzingis. I think Holmgren will do very well early on, and everyone will mock me for what I just said. Then by year 4 or 5, Holmgren will be broken in half and not the same player. The great matchup of the draft will be if the Detroit Pistons can draft U of A's Ben Mathurin. He would fit in the backcourt so well with number 1 overall pick from last year, Cade Cunningham. I guarantee you Detroit would be a playoff team in 2 years, possibly this coming season. Other NBA news. John Wall has opted into his player option for $47.5 million to stay in Houston. However, I don't believe he'll get all that. I don't think he's a jerk for opting in, but I do think it's a money grab to then turn into a buyout from the Houston Rockets, and he'll move on and be a free agent. Last NBA story is horrible. Caleb Swanigan was one of my favorite players while he played at Purdue. A monster on the boards, a hustler throughout the entire game, irrelevant of how much he weighed, and worked on his shooting to become a good shooter by the end of his career. And now the young man is dead. He's only 25 years old. The coroner says he died of natural causes in Fort Wayne, Indiana. NFL. Two disgusting men are now going to shape the immediate future of the NFL. Deshaun Watson and Daniel Snyder. What is the NFL going to do with these two men? 24 women have sued Deshaun Watson in civil court, alleging sexual harassment and inappropriate sexual conduct and sexual contact. After saying he's totally innocent and will never settle, he has now settled 20 of the 24 cases. Originally, his lawyer, Rusty Hardin, and the man representing the 24 accusers of Deshaun Watson, said they would not hold a trial during the football season. Now that there's only 4 cases, we have no idea if they will hold to that bargain. The league, however, says this has not affected their investigation of Deshaun Watson in any form. Even if Deshaun Watson settles all 24 cases, he can still be fined, suspended, or both from the NFL for violation of the personal conduct policy. Here's how this relates to Daniel Snyder. Daniel Snyder refused to testify in front of the Congressional Oversight Committee. Magically, there's a new report out of the Washington Post in which sources have told them Daniel Snyder settled out of court a 2009 disagreement with a former employee. A former employee of the Washington football team alleges that Daniel Snyder attempted to rape her on a charter flight back from the Country Music Awards in Las Vegas. She says he repeatedly asked for sex, groped her several times, and attempted to remove her clothing. Daniel Snyder denies all of it, but he paid her over $1 million, and she accepted a non-disclosure agreement. It is in the league bylaws. Anytime you possibly have violated the personal conduct policy, you must report it to the NFL. So that either means Washington reported the violation to the NFL and nothing happened to him, which sets up problems for them to adjudicate Deshaun Watson, or the Washington football team hid everything from the NFL, meaning they totally violated the personal conduct policy and didn't even adhere to it, which is the same thing, but I was on a roll. Rob Gronkowski has announced his retirement. Here's what's strange. His own agent, Drew Rosenhaus, says he would not be surprised if Rob Gronkowski changes his mind. It might be as simple as one phone call during the season from Tom Brady. Baseball. How bad does the Paul Goldschmidt trade look right now? Carson Kelly is batting 115 on the season, no home runs, 4 RBIs. Pitcher Luke Weaver was just bumped out of the opportunity to earn the number 5 spot in the rotation and will now pitch out of the bullpen. On the other hand, Paul Goldschmidt is trending to be the first half MVP. Despite being 34 years old, he leads in all slash categories in the National League for batting average, on base percentage, and slugging percentage. An outstanding player slashes 300, 400, 500 on those three stats. Paul Goldschmidt is currently slashing 344, 423, and 624. There are only 13 players in the history of Major League Baseball that have ever had 300 home runs, 1,000 RBIs, 150 stolen bases, and an on-base plus slugging percentage of 900 or better. I said there were 13. 10 of them are in the Hall of Fame. 3 of them are tied to steroids and have been voted out of the Hall of Fame to this point. And Goldie is projected to be number 14. Paul Goldschmidt is only 4 home runs away, 15 RBIs away, and 7 stolen bases away from reaching those numbers. He already has an OPS of 917. In other words, the Diamondbacks traded away a guaranteed Hall of Famer for a 115 hitting catcher and a relief pitcher. There's more. Currently this year, Paul Goldschmidt is batting 429 with runners in scoring position. 429. That's 223 points higher than the Arizona Diamondbacks, who currently rank 29th in runners in scoring position. There are 30 teams in Major League Baseball. Only the Rays are worse. This year, he has an on-base plus slugging percentage of 918 with 2 strikes. That's the best since Mookie Betts in 2018. So anybody who complains, the Dodgers aren't fair because they have Mookie Betts. The Diamondbacks once had Paul Goldschmidt, who's having a year better than Mookie Betts. Right now in OPS plus, he's at 200. All you need to know is there's only 5 human beings that have ever done that in the history of the game. Honus Wagner, Babe Ruth, Ted Williams, and steroid users Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire. How did this happen? In 2019, he was batting 256 on fastballs, making most people in the game, including the Diamondbacks, believe he's getting old and can't catch up to the fastball. He didn't think that was the problem. He reduced his knee bend, stood straighter at the plate, and it allowed him to get a freer path for his hips to get the bat to the low strike. And now over the last 2.5 seasons, he's batting 327 when someone throws him a fastball. Speaking of the Diamondbacks, they might have affected the National League Eastern Division race. After losing in 10 innings to the Diamondbacks and facing a potential sweep on June 1st, manager Brian Snitker had a team-only meeting with the 4 games below 500 Braves. As the Braves prepared for a massive beatdown from their manager, he told them, "Relax. You're trying to play up to a World Series standard instead of just playing your game. Relax, go play." The Braves won that Wednesday game 6-0. It started a 14-game winning streak, and they're now 16-3 since they lost 2 games to the Diamondbacks. Interesting weekend in the PGA. After ripping LIV Golf for weeks, Brooks Koepka caved to the money. He's now a fellow co-worker with Khashoggi's murderers and financiers of the 9/11 attack. In a golfers-only meeting, the PGA met with players getting ready for the Travelers Championship this weekend. Shockingly, the PGA is making a bunch of future changes that sound an awful lot like what LIV Golf is already doing. They will go back to a calendar year schedule instead of one that actually starts in October. There will be 8 marquee events in which $20 extra million has suddenly been found to be placed in purses at these marquee events. Plus, there will be 3 new events of at least $25 million purses with limited fields, no cuts, and played under a team format. And that is your Breakdown, Breakdown, Breakdown.
Before I get into versus Vegas, I got to tell you something that I just don't get. Every Monday at 1 o'clock, I am a guest. I'm a co-host, but really, in my opinion, I'm a guest on 1580 The Fanatic. The show is the main event with Steve McCollum and Izzy. I enjoy doing it. If you care to know this, I do it for free. And I'm just hoping to increase the enlisted members of the Unplugged Army, because I feel like this is a way for people to know, hey, I'm still out there and I still exist. And I like that. Well, he actually had the blasphemous opinion, yes, that's a word, that the song Danger Zone from Kenny Loggins, because we were talking about Top Gun, is better when you're looking at it through the prism of 80s Get Fired Up music than Survivor's Eye of the Tiger. Top Gun or Rocky, Apollo Creed yelling at Rocky Balboa, look at all of these boxers. That's what's different. It's the Eye of the Tiger, man. It's the Eye of the Tiger. And I mean, just feel the lyrics. Rising up, back on the street. Oh, yeah. Now, Danger Zone lyrics. Revving up your engine, listen to her howl and roar. Okay, that's not that bad. But here you go. Metal under tension, begging you to touch and go. Metal under tension? And then the weirdest line, you'll never say hello to you until you get it on the red line overload. Now, what is that? You'll never say hello to you. Why am I saying hello to me? Until I get it on the red line overload? Get what? Do I have to join the Mile High Club to be able to say hello to me? I'll never know what I can do. You'll never know what you can do until you get it up as high as you can go. What? Get what up? Okay, what are we making these references to? So obviously, don't say hello to you. As opposed to, it's the Eye of the Tiger that is the king of the fight, rising up to the challenge of our rivals. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Where's a boxing glove? Want to ring the bell? Ding, ding. Steve McCollum, you've lost. It's time for
Versus Mayo.
There will be no dancing. Oh. I am so frustrated with the Los Angeles Angels right now. I went 4-1 2 days ago. My miss was Angels Royals. Royals won 6-2. Yesterday, I only went 2-2, and one of my misses, Royals win 12-11. Come on. Come on. Royals are going for the sweep against the Angels. How does this happen? Let's go. So I went 2-2 on the day. I took the Dodgers -1.5 against the Reds. Gonsolin was pitching. I knew I had that one. That was easy. Dodgers went 8-2. I took Boston and Detroit under 9.5. Oh, I crushed that one. It was 5-4. I was sweating that one. And then I had Minnesota -1.5 against Cleveland. Really upset the way that one turned out. Cleveland won 6-5. It was either in 10 innings or 11 innings. I can't remember. But that stunk. Especially when, you know, it wasn't 11 innings, because in the 10th, Minnesota had runners on first and second. And I'm thinking, okay, you can hit a 3-run homer and still cover here. Let's go. Instead, it's a strikeout. Indians score in the next half inning. Ball game. Oh, my gosh. So 2-2 bumps me to 350 and 290 on the year. 350 wins, 290 losses. And let's get into today's games. I got a lot today. There's a lot of games I like. I'm going to stay with this trend that with the way the goaltending is going in the Stanley Cup Finals, I have no idea who's going to win, but I think they're going to keep scoring. The over-under is 6.5. I'm a little worried that it's 3-2, 4-2, something like that. But I think we should get up to 6.5 goals. I like maybe 3-3 in another overtime game, or maybe just a beat down and it's 5-2. But I think I'm going to get my 7th goal. So I'm taking Colorado-Tampa Bay over 6.5 in the Stanley Cup. I got the Phillies -1.5 against Texas. I like the pitching matchup there. I got the Diamondbacks just because I don't think they're going to get swept. I got them, but I'm taking the run line. So I got them +1.5. And it's a little bit because even though I don't trust Mad Bum, I don't think the Padres have a great bullpen or a great offense. So I'm going to stay with the Diamondbacks there. Since I'm going with the Avalanche on one pick, not to win, but to go over, I'm going to go against the Rockies then. Rockies-Miami, it's a 7.5 total, and both teams are pitching, throwing their best pitcher. I think I'm going to, and they just had a, gosh, I think it was like 12-10 Marlins last night. So I think this one's going to be the opposite. So I'm going to take Miami and the Rockies on the under. No, the game is not in Coors Field. I think the Dodgers-Reds total is way out of whack. I love this under at 9.5. Vegas will disagree with me. They'll say in that bandbox of a stadium, you take the over. I'm saying I've got Anderson versus Castillo, both guys with whips around 1, all right? So unless one of them gets shelled, I really like the under at 9.5 with Reds and Dodgers. I got Baltimore on the money line because Patrick Corbin's going. I never want to take Baltimore's favored, but I don't trust the Orioles to cover anything. But I think Patrick Corbin's a disaster this year. So I'm going to go Orioles on the money line against Washington. And I like the pitching matchup with Red Sox and Tigers, so I'm going to take the under there. The under's 8.5. That makes me a little nervous. I wish it was, gosh, I would really be happy if that was 9.5. But I'll take the under 8.5 there. And I think I'm going to go a whole $20 on this. The Angels -1.5 on the run line against the Royals. I'm making my money back from the last 2 days. That's a real gambling problem when you think, oh, I'll just win it all back. But there's no way the Royals are sweeping the Angels. So when you see scores tonight, I want your eyeballs to go to that Angels-Royals game. There is no sweep in Anaheim. It sounds like a Beastie Boys song. No sweep in Anaheim. That's not happening. So I'm making up my money for Monday and Tuesday today. Angels are covering 1.5. I've declared it. I have spoken. I am Queel. That does it for today's version of Doug Franz Unplugged. Please send me a tweet or an IG post today and tell me what you think when I do breakdown, breakdown, breakdown. That's hard work. I'm kind of fishing for a compliment, I admit. But if you look at that and say, Doug, that's not worth an hour of your time, well, I'll stop doing it. But I think it sounds good. So I do that. But man, it takes a lot out of me, but hopefully you enjoyed it. And to me, it's a great way to cover either complex things of one topic or a whole bunch of simple things all at once. And that's what I wanted to do with all those topics that we had, especially that Daniel Snyder topic. That is creepy. What a jerk. I mean, I'm sorry to get personal, but the way he personally tries to cozy up to everybody else, I think it's totally worth it. And then sit here and decline everything. Again, what a jerk. That's all I have to say about that. Have a great Wednesday. It's a dominant Wednesday before a triumph Thursday. Let's finish strong this week. It starts today. I'll see you tomorrow.